thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I'm Wally here, my boy Ray Jeezy. We waiting on Will T, though. What's going on, Ray?
We're accustomed to waiting on Will T. I'm trying to compare him to an athlete that was late a lot. Eventually, they got in trouble or got cut. Plaxico Burress, maybe. He shot himself.
But he shot himself.
Who comes to mind about
being late
from any professional sport that
a late has athlete?
Been late, constantly late to meetings.
Oh, and eventually,
man. It didn't work out. Antonio Brown was late recently. What was it?
Randy Moss? Randy Moss was a guy that – but he was successful, though.
Will was not a talented I'm glad to be myself today, honestly.
Oh, man.
I'm glad I'm not like everybody else. I'm glad I don't pick the same teams as everybody else.
No, you don't. You're definitely an outlaw.
Of course. And I'm glad I didn't pick the Milwaukee Bucks to beat the Toronto Raptors.
I picked Toronto to beat, you know.
But so. You guys were fairly confident, and somebody convinced you that Milwaukee supporting cast was better than Toronto's.
He convinced me, did he?
Whoever you said you argued with the NIH, like you.
They did.
Obviously, we haven't been on a few weeks, so that's why I'm bringing this up. But to be quick, I told you guys that Chris Middleton he was an all-star. Yes, Bradley Beal's an all-star, but a lot of guys make all-star teams.
Yeah, agreed.
DeMar DeRozan. Doesn't mean it's going to equate to playoff success. That's what I'm trying to tell Will. He's not here, so I get to have my moment. You know what I mean?
You're right, man. Real dudes say real things, man.
Real dudes say real things. Real people do real things.
All right, man. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also, join me on Sunday, August 4th at Bowie Bay Sox Stadium for the first annual celebrity kickball game in honor of a close friend of mine, Barry Sharp, and all affected by mental illness and suicide. This game will include former NFL players like Santana Moss, Lee Bowden, and Fasante Sanko. The kickball game will be after the Bowie Bay Sox game. And the Bowie Bay Sox game is at 1:35. You can buy your tickets at groupmatics.events/event/LawrenceLaw. Lauren is spelled LAURYNS Law.
By the way, shout out to Kelsey. Kelsey Nelson.
Oh, yeah.
She's hosting an event on Friday. Mm-hmm. At which Carolina Kitchen is it?
One of Hinesville.
Okay.
Hinesville.
Because it's one, and Brandywine is another one, obviously, by the Boulevard. But, yeah, go out. Live podcast. It's going to be tight.
Yeah, check it out. Definitely check
Celebrating
it out.
Celebrating NBA Finals.
It's a Friday. Yeah, because NBA Finals Friday. On Friday.
It's
coming
Friday.
It's coming Friday. So, definitely check it out.
Just prior to game four.
Yeah, so definitely check it out. And also, I want to mention this too, man. Part of that, suicide and mental illness is a serious thing. So, always when you see the next person beside you or left or right or whatever, you know, greet them, say hi, give them a smile. You know, you don't know, that goes a long way at times.
And try to help somebody as much as you can, because a lot of times when people commit suicide, they say, oh, this person should have just reached out.
Exactly.
But a lot of times people are reaching out, whether it's social media, they might be venting, but a lot of times we don't extend our hand. And I say we because I fall victim.
Me too.
Help everybody. And you never can prepare for a suicide. But, you know, I'm a counselor by trade outside of my my job here at the Urban Sports Scene. So I do take it serious. And it's unfortunately something that I see on a consistent basis.
Definitely. But Will T would normally say this if he's on time. Let's get into our tradition, the pregame. Okay. Here are our topics. We'll talk about the surging Washington Nationals. Right now, they are down to the Chicago White Sox 5-0 in the, I want to say, it's the third inning.
It's the third inning. Top
of the third inning. And at 8:20, we'll talk about the NBA Finals with the Warriors and Raptors tied 1-1. Finally, at 8:30, host of the Quarterly Report podcast, Armand Lee, will join the show to talk about boxing, including the big heavyweight boxing upset with Andy Ruiz Jr. TKOing Anthony Joshua. But first,
Washington Nationals.
Go for it, man.
I'm a Nationals fan. That's why I feel like I need to lead the segment out. But anyway,
you should.
Obviously, the Nationals 4-1 on their recent road trip. They're now winning series, thank goodness. Still 7 games under 500, but this team is playing better baseball.
Oh, they are. They're 26-33. I think they're playing better baseball because the bullpen is improved. The bullpen in last two games, they haven't given up a run, though. With the caveat, last game against the Reds, Matt Scherzer went 8 innings and Doolittle had to pitch the rest. But I think as a team, you know, offensively, they've been more consistent with Soto. Soto has been hitting lights out. Howie Kendricks has been really good. I'm having a moment. There's another individual. And also, yeah, I'm sorry. And Dozier has heated up a little bit for this team. And this team has gotten healthier. So to me, looking at where this team is now compared to where they were before, this team is just a better – they're a better team because of health, and they're a better team because the bullpen's playing a little better. Yes, you're starting to see also – you're starting to see Soto play at a higher level, like an all-star level, the level they thought he would play after what he did. I mean, after what he did last season, people looked at him, okay, he could be Bryce's replacement. So I think Soto, the bullpen playing better, Dozier playing better. And also, you know, you always have a consistent with Anthony Rendon. Anthony Rendon is, to me, one of the best players in baseball, not one of the best third basemen, but one of the best hitters, better players in baseball.
One thing that I recognize about this team is that they're playing with more of an attitude, more of an edge. I felt as though when Bryce departed for Philly that he was taking some toughness with him because, you know, I love that about him. He always played with anger almost. I love the Legion of Doom paint. I know you used to hate on that, but as who he was, I feel like he's lost some of that, by the way. Anyway, but that's separate.
Yeah.
We're hearing less and less mentions of Bryce, but I just feel like even Juan Soto from the very beginning of the season, he showed like a swagger, like he was confident coming in. Now he's going through his ups and downs,
but
which any young player is
going
to go through. But now, right, exactly. He's got a swag back, and I think it's translating to more confidence across the entire team and including the manager. You had posed a question. I don't know if you put it on social media or not, but has our opinion of Davey Martinez changed? The only reason for me it's changed personally is because I feel as though as a second year manager, you're going to have some learning curves. You're going to have some bumps in the road, just like a player. And I think I personally have to give him time to improve and to grow as a manager. Now, obviously, this is a win now league, just like across all professional sports.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have much time. Dusty Baker learned that on multiple occasions. But again, if I'm going to give this man his just due, being that he's just his second year being a manager, I think we have to allow him time to grow. And I think he's growing now.
Yeah.
But can he grow during times of adversity? To me, he seems like he struggled to manage his team when they are not playing well.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. I don't think he's the type of manager that can help this team up when they're like struggling, like at adverse situations. But I will give credit when credit's due. I've been very critical of Davey Martinez, but I do see improvement. I like the way he's handling the bullpen. He's starting to trust he's starting to trust his arms a little bit more. Instead of going off of like the numbers, he's going off more of a feel. Like you watched Matt Scherzer yesterday, you know, if you look at baseball analytics and how baseball guys think, like Scherzer would probably be out of the game after he threw 100 pitches. I believe he threw about 120 in that game against the Reds, and his stuff was crisp. He was hitting the strike zone. His velocity was at hitting 96. So if you look with the eye test, you look at Max Scherzer, and you say, like, okay, he was doing it. He was doing a darn thing. So looking at Davey Martinez now taking that route, saying, you know what, Max has his stuff. Max looks good. He looks sharp. He's going with some more managerial feel. So I think he's getting better. I like that he took away. Robles. He moved Robles from the ninth spot to more up in the order to the seventh spot. I like that. I like that change. So when you're looking at Davey Martinez as a manager, I've liked some of his moves. I've liked it even prior to this nice little stretch of games the Nats have been playing in a positive way. I liked him before that, even when they were struggling. I liked how he was handling his bullpen little by little. I like how he's using Rainey towards the end. I didn't like how he used Rainey initially, but Rainey throws about 97. He's a guy with a nice slider. He's a guy that you can use in the sixth, seventh inning. And then you can use Swirl, and then you can use Doolittle to close out the game in the ninth. So I like the way he's using his bullpen. I think he's finally found some guys that he can go to. Even if he decides to use Bear Claw in the eighth, obviously Grace to situational lefties. But I like how he's starting to mix and match his bullpen. I think it took him some time to get used to it, but now he's kind of getting the feel of, okay, I can use this guy at this spot. Okay, if I need a guy who can strike somebody out, I can use Rainey. If I need my constant guy in terms of the seventh guy, I can use Swirl. If I need some to mix and match with lefties, I can use Grace. So I like the way he's used his bullpen. I think he's getting better with that. Hopefully he can consistently do that. He can keep that going on because the Nats, the way this the NL East is playing out, the Phillies don't look like a super like a strong team. They're struggling with the San Diego Padres right now. They struggle with the Dodgers, so they're on a losing streak right now. So if the Nats can find a way to keep, you know, keep this momentum going, right now they're 6.5 out. They can close this gap up to a point where, to the All-Star break, we can be talking about the Nats like in a big time race in the NL East.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. Ray, Wally, and somebody else who is not made it yet. Can't mention him. You just mentioned the Nats are 6.5 games back. Can they make up that ground? One thing Davey Martinez recognizes, just like we all do, baseball, it's such a long season.
It's a long season.
And you can turn it around. They're starting to turn it around now before the All-Star break, which is awesome.
Yeah.
The bullpen, you contribute how many losses to the bullpen? Numerous.
Numerous losses, yeah.
If you turn that bullpen around, Mike Rizzo makes some moves, possibly. Mm-hmm. They typically make midseason moves based on just, you know, acquisitions over the past several seasons. I feel as though the Nationals can catch the Phillies. Again, this is a winnable division.
Very winnable.
Nobody's very strong. The Phillies aren't strong. They just lost McCutchen, who
– out for ACL, out for the whole year.
Who only had 10 home runs, and he's not the same MVP he was several
Still
years ago.
A solid
but he's
player.
An important part of their lineup, and I think that's going to hurt them, and the Nationals have a golden opportunity to catch them.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that the Nats – even their offensive lineup, when healthy, I feel that this team can score runs. And then when you have, again, I'm going to keep saying it, even though Corbin pitched, you know, didn't pitch well his last outing against the Reds, Strasburg is struggling here against the White Sox, giving up 5 runs. But still, at the same time, you got 3 studs in Scherzer, Stras, Corbin. Even, to be honest with you, Eric Fetty, he's a guy who stepped up. In that fourth spot, and then Sanchez had a good outing not too long in his last outing. So when you're looking at the Nats with their pitching, I still think their pitching is strong with their pitching and their offense. You know, you got Turner setting the table. You got Adam Eaton. You got Rendon. Then after Rendon, you got Soto, and you're gonna have Matt. You have Howie Kendricks as your utility player. He's not even a starter, and he's got close to, I believe he has 10 homers. Then you have obviously, you know, Zimmerman hasn't come back yet. So this team and Robles, this team is strong offensively. So you mix that in with their pitching staff. Yeah, they can make a solid run. I feel like when you look at their pitching staff and their offense, I look at the Nats as more of a, you know, as more of a scarier team than the Phillies. And the Phillies have to make a couple more moves, I think, to solidify themselves as a contender. But we're seeing the Phillies right now struggle. And again, Ray mentioned losing McCutchen. Yeah, he's not the same dude like that MVP dude he was with the Pirates, but he's a leader and he's a baller. He's a guy that goes out there and plays hard. So you lose him, that hurts. And especially when you're not playing great baseball at the moment anyway.
Last point I want to make about the Nationals, and this is important, and it goes to the larger discussion about this sports, about sports in this town. Right now, baseball is not something or a sport where people are excited about, you know, going to the ballpark. I feel as though if you're a true Nationals fan and you support this team, get out to the park and see them. Go out there and support your team. That's one thing that whether you like them or you hate them, Philly, they're going to have their contingent there. Right now, I feel like that's one thing that's lacking. You look at the game tonight, the ballpark is half empty.
Yeah.
You know, Bryce complained about that a lot. That's what I think tipped the scales for him leaving.
He bought that money, man. He was doing
well, yeah, that too. But, I mean, he would have got a lot of money here as well. That's what I'm saying. I feel as though.
Not what the Phillies were offering. Not what the Phillies were going to give him, though. Not the Learners were not going to give him that.
The Learners offered him $300 million, right?
Nah, it was not. He wanted four. His goal was getting 4 or 5, close to 4 or 5. The Learners we gave him in terms of even the way it was worded worked out. It was like more 280 at the time to 300. Like, but was it like a rough 300?
So money was the determining factor. I would agree. I'm not arguing. But don't you feel as though?
I know what you're saying.
If you're wrestling with a decision, if you're like,
I agree. I know what you're saying.
If my choice comes down to Washington was one of his last 3 choices.
Yeah,
I heard.
Yeah, it was. They were in the running.
And Philly, and it was it the Dodgers? Was that a
the
choice?
The Giants.
My bad. It's like, okay, where do I want to play? I don't know if San Francisco has a stronger fan base. They probably do baseball wise than the Nationals do here. But I still feel like that factored into him wanting to leave, and he's taking shots at the fans plenty of times.
So George is listening to the show. He tweeted us. He said, wait a minute, Ray, the Nats offered him that money, but so much of it was deferred. It was ridiculous. It wasn't a real offer.
Well, I wouldn't disagree. Again, I definitely wasn't arguing that money wasn't a strong factor, or if not the primary factor. But I still feel as though this fan base is not what it could be. Mm-hmm. And we were all so excited to get baseball back in D.C., you know. So the same way the fans obviously rally around the Caps when it comes to playoff time.
Yeah.
Washington football, obviously. Mm-hmm. That's been a tradition around here. I feel as though baseball can definitely pick up some steam with the type of talent that you just described, with the star power that we do have with Scherzer, Strasburg, even Rendon, I feel like
is
developing into that guy.
Yeah, Rendon is definitely that guy.
So I'm just saying, outside of, you know, I don't know how you describe it in baseball. Do you describe it X's and O's? But, you know, just whatever you want to say.
Close enough.
outside of gameplay, strategy, managerial strategies, whatever, I think fans need to support the team more. I definitely support the Nats, but you know me.
Yeah.
NBA Finals is over. I'll get more into baseball.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But right now, you know, basketball is something that does come before baseball for me personally. And it might be a lot of people like that, but I feel as though the team just doesn't get enough love.
My man Will T is a big baseball fan. He's a big Nats fan.
Oh. He goes to more games than I do.
He represents that.
He said the ballpark.
That's like the only DC team he
buys food at the concessions. He goes to Five Guys and.
No, I don't do Five Guys at
the. You get the falafel.
You don't do Five Dog. You don't do Five Guys, dog.
You get a hot dog.
Five Guys burgers.
No, you eat a half smoke. You're a half smoke guy, baby. Sauce.
I'm not a big Five Guys.
It made me sick one day. I mean, one day I ain't gonna lie, but that's because that took me years to have a burger.
You know, even because on our farm, but. They haven't done anything to me that merits me. You know,
along with the discussion, though, what do you think the ballpark experience is like? Like, it's not better than Camden Yards than me.
No, it's definitely not better.
They got more people
than
Camden Yards.
I mean, at this point, but, yeah. You know, when the Orioles heat up, the whole city, the whole Baltimore is behind them,
exactly.
Right? And that's one of the better ballparks to go view
it. It's a nice ballpark.
Like the Nats,
it's the best in the league. You minimizing it. You're an Orioles fan.
I love the ballpark, but it's a nice ballpark.
The Nats ballpark is more. It feels more corporate.
Oh, okay, now right? I can see that. Yeah, because you have a lot of Fed workers in there. They have Fed nights and whatnot.
Yeah, just the surrounding of you know.
I'm with you.
Oh yeah, it's business related.
Okay. It's definitely.
And you see the soccer stadium almost done. It looks nice though. I haven't seen
a soccer stadium.
Gentrification is real, but
it's real.
I can't be mad.
It was real.
That's a whole nother discussion.
Yeah. It's a big discussion. We can really go on that.
I did want to congratulate you. Your celebrity kickball game you're playing.
It's not – well, I'm helping out.
Are you playing?
I'm not sure yet.
So you're a celebrity.
I'm not a celebrity, dude.
I mean, you've made it. You've made it now. You have gone from a guy on the internet talking sports locally
to a full-blown celebrity. This has nothing to do with the podcast. It's like I have friends that –
And you got the Furious Styles look tonight. You got your shirt sleeves rolled up.
A friend of mine who committed suicide, so we're helping out the situation.
I respect the cause. Yeah. But you are attached to this kickball game as a celebrity, sir. Celebrities participate in it. So you are a celebrity.
Dude, just like you said, I am not a celebrity, man.
That's great.
You know what I'm saying? Both teams play hard.
All right. So
you're a celebrity. The next thing you know, Ray is going to be a vegan influencer. So it's crazy.
Listen, we mentioned before you got hit, Andrew McCutcheon's out for the season, 20 ACL. Not big news or not new news to anybody.
Oh,
but we feel like the Nats now have a golden opportunity to steal this division from the Phillies. Speaking of golden opportunity, do the Raptors have a golden opportunity with Klay Thompson's injury along with Kevon Looney being out? We'll discuss the NBA Finals after the break.
Listen to
the
Urban Sports Thing.
For ages.
You did.
Deuces.
Will T. Tardy.
You're listening to the Urban Sports with Wally, Will T, and Ray. Again, join me on Sunday, August 4th at Bowie Bay Sox Stadium for the first annual celebrity kickball game in honor of a close friend of mine, Barry Sharp, and all affected by mental illness and suicide. This game will include former NFL player Santana Moss, Lee Bodden, and also Vasante Shenko. The kickball game will be after the Bowie Bay Sox game. The Bowie Bay Sox game will be at will start at 1:35 p.m. So you can buy your tickets at www.groupmatics.event/event/Lawrence Law.
So, but celebrity.
Nobody celebrity, dude. It, man. My boy dude made it. So extra, man. All right, man. Sunday.
Just think about it, man. 38 years, she was fresh off the boat. And now
wow. Behold, Kunta. All right, Sunday night. The Warriors defeated the Raptors in game two with Steph being sick, Klay leaving the game early due to an injury, and no KD. Will the Raptors regret that game? Losing that game.
The Raptors go on cold spells often. We know this. We've seen this throughout the course of the season and playoffs. And when you're not making shots against a team like Golden State, you're going to pay for it eventually. I don't care who's in the lineup because they have guys off the bench who can score. Shout out to Quinn Cook.
Oh, my God.
DMV's Quinn Cook.
Yeah, exactly.
He went to the same barbershop I saw when he was a little kid. I'm excited for that guy, man.
Nah, he balled
especially,
out, man.
Especially
he
because out. He's not that much taller than me. He's so small, but he's making such a big impact.
Yeah.
So it was great to see Quinn Cook come in and knocking three huge three-pointers that, in my opinion, it kept the Warriors in front for the remainder
of
the game.
It sure did. No, I agree.
And it extended momentum, Will T.
It did.
y'all stupid. Momentum, it did.
Even though I don't believe in momentum.
18-0 runs, that's momentum. Will,
that's not sports. That's
that.
Momentum. You making nine baskets and a team not scoring any. That's
here you
not
go.
Momentum.
Here you go. You got to rationalize just, everything. Here you go.
It's just not momentum. But, I mean, I digress. Look, Toronto had an excellent opportunity in Toronto. With Klay Thompson out, Kevin Looney injured, yeah. and KD non-existent.
Steph was sick, supposedly.
Steph is allegedly.
Yeah.
Sick. You had a great opportunity to go up 2-0 going back to Oakland. Now it's tied 1-1. This Golden State's starting to get a little bit more healthy. Boogie Cousins knocked that game one rust off of him.
He looked good, man.
Yeah, he looked good after not
he
being
moved well. That's what was most
he
impressive.
Moved well. Yeah, he
that's
moved
the best
well.
I've seen him move all season.
And then not just from a movement like him running up and down the
that's
floor, but his count like counters whenever he was getting stopped, like he would always have like a counter move down on the block. He looked like the old Boogie Cousins, not as rough and tough as physical as he once did, but he looked a little bit more nimble and agile.
Yeah. He's such a great passer, man.
I still believe that Golden State will win this in six.
Yeah.
But
hey, George, I appreciate you listening, bro. I'm reading your tweets. I'm not in debate mode today, but I will ask you this if you want to respond. Do you feel like the Raptors – just sit around and watch Kawhi? Like, I don't know what you guys think about Nick Nurse, but sometimes
to a certain extent,
it seems like their offense turns into Kawhi do your thing and they hoist up a bunch of threes.
Look,
that's a good question.
The reality is the offense is get Kawhi the ball, try to get Kawhi the ball on the wing.
Yeah.
Or if he gets the ball at the top, he wants to get to the elbow and create either a double team or get a shot or get that elbow jump shot.
Yeah.
2-point shot. Two-pointer. Me personally, while I look at the game and I just see a lot of the guys, a lot of the offense that's created for Toronto is off of ball rotation.
That's how they really score, yeah.
Yeah, or pick and roll or ball rotation or with the ball in Kawhi's hand.
Yeah.
I would just allow Kawhi to get 30-some-odd points and I would lock down.
You're talking about for Golden State, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, this is the thing about Toronto. I feel like they're playing that style because they're trying to have Kawhi – they want Kawhi to stay. It is what it, heard Kawhi. He bought a home in Toronto too. I heard he bought
a
home in Toronto.
That's a report.
That's a report. Yeah, I heard. I said I heard. I didn't say it was a fact. But at the same time, I think that they're doing all that to kind of entice to keep Kawhi in favor with Toronto. That's my opinion because I think Toronto plays better basketball when they move the ball in the fourth quarter.
Of course they do.
Yeah, in the fourth quarter, you see that a lot. Like Kawhi, make a play. take us home, Kawhi. Like, no, you're okay when you're running. I mean, when you're moving the ball around, you're hitting. When Lowry's taking shots, when Danny Green's is involved, when Siakam is slashing, you're good when you're running some of that off ball action. So, you know, I don't like it in the fourth quarter, and you saw that in that stretch when they weren't scoring. Is when they didn't move the ball. Kawhi make a play.
They had multiple stretches when they were scoring. It wasn't like, just one.
Yeah, and then when you're playing Golden State, you have, and this is prior to Klay being hurt, you have like multiple good defenders. You have Iguodala, you have Klay Thompson, and you have Draymond Green. These are three good defenders. Why are you making it hard for Kawhi, for him going ISO? Move the ball around.
And George, Steph was sick. On top of the injuries we talk about, Steph was sick. And you know what? When the Raptors finally got it together, the Warriors pretty much held on. Like a fighter who won a ton of rounds in the middle of the fight, and at the end, they gas out, which the Warriors look gassed in the end of the fourth quarter. But the Raptors couldn't score either.
Mm-hmm. So, to me, like, looking at that game, I thought they lost the Raptors may have lost a series on that game.
Thank you, George.
I think the Raptors may have lost.
We agree today.
Because, again, Steph was sick. No KD. Klay was out, and Klay was out, and then you saw them struggle down the stretch. Like, the Warriors couldn't even score for real down the stretch.
In defense of the Raptors, who I picked to go to the finals, by the way, Kawhi is not himself right now either. Kawhi is scoring 30, but he's
forcing a lot, though.
He's hobbling.
But he's forcing a lot,
but you know what, though?
Too.
He was 8 of 16 until he missed those last four shots. Yeah. You're shooting 50% from the field, mm-hmm. and you're getting to the line. Mm-hmm. You're still efficient. And you still are unstoppable, essentially, even with them throwing double teams. He just has to become a better passer in these situations. And I think he'll be fine. And he's prepared for the moment and the magnitude of the finals because he's been there. Mm-hmm. But the rest of his guys haven't. And I think that's the big difference between the Warriors, who even their bench, these guys have been in championship runs before, including Andrew Bogut, who played a role off the bench.
He played well.
Draymond
throws some vicious oops at Andrew Bogut. So real quick. For the Raptors, in game three, Klay, Klay is questionable. KD's not playing. It's already been mm-hmm. put out there. Is game three a must-win game for the Raptors with all that being involved?
No, man. There's not a must-win until you go down. If you're down three, two.
Klay probably may not
play this game, man. Then it's a must-win. All of these games.
Come on, bro.
Look, you lose this game.
Man. You know this,
KD,
man. KD's playing
KD's
game four.
KD's going to play game four.
We don't know KD's playing game four.
Chances are he's playing game
There's
four.
A strong
There's
assumption
a strong assumption that he's playing
do we
game
know,
four.
Do now. We know that?
Strong
do,
assumption. It's not a fact.
Have you seen the medical
record? It's not a fact.
Have you seen the medical record?
It's not a fact.
Has he practiced?
I know my truth.
Has he practiced?
I know my
truth. Have you seen the medical records?
I know my truth.
Have we seen KD out on the floor?
I know my truth.
Okay.
Look, all I know is
you know what you want to believe.
Yahoo's,
so we don't know
Chris
for sure.
Chris Haynes said that it's very likely, and Chris Haynes is very good at what he does. It's very likely what's the name is playing game four?
Chris Haynes' sources are
legit, dog. They're the players.
They're the players. Got people around them. He's talking to these guys. But regardless. It'll be interesting
come at me
though,
like that.
To
see. I'm just asking a question.
I'm wondering if the Raptors are going to try that box and one again, which seems effective in the fourth quarter. But the thing is, Steph Curry was sick, so we'll see.
If you don't have Klay Thompson on the floor,
that's what I'm saying. If you don't got Klay
hypothetically,
Thompson,
you might go to
that's
that.
What I'm saying. If you don't,
then
they
Draymond,
don't have
Draymond's
a Klay.
Going to step up again.
Yeah, if you don't have Klay, say you don't have Klay
and Boogie.
You don't have Klay. You don't have KD.
I mean, well, if you have Boogie on the floor, I don't know how effective the box.
Exactly.
I don't know how effective that boxing want to be.
Yeah. Nick Nurse, this is going to define how great of a coach he can become.
No, I know.
Because the Warriors right now are looking like the Patriots and the Spurs. Like, next man up.
Yeah,
you know,
true.
I can get rid of this dude. I'll get rid of Andrew Bogut. I'll bring in JaVale McGee. I'll bring in this dude. We can win. I'll bring in Nick Young. We win with whoever. That's that Bill Belichick.
If you think about how this Golden State dynasty started with that team that was 67-15, that team went like 10-11 deep.
Yeah, agreed.
So it's there. I don't think that Steve Kerr is he's totally gone away from it. Mm-hmm. I still think that he's instilled the belief in everyone that's on that
but
roster.
You think it's
and
the
they
same,
know that
the
there's
same.
An op- I'm not going to say the skill level
okay,
is as high,
okay,
but
okay.
I do believe that every player on the Golden State Warriors bench knows that anytime I could be called upon and the way this offense is run, I have an opportunity
to contribute.
Yeah, McKinney,
Jordan Bell, I mean, come on. Who, what other team would they excel on?
That's true. Andy Ruiz Jr. shocked the world by TKO and heavyweight champ Anthony Joshua. Will T was doing major texting. Quarterly Reports podcast, Armand Lee will join us to discuss this after the break. Listen to the Urban Sports Thing.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Come on, man. And with the local DBC news, Ed and Cool J with a triumphant comeback.
More a solo. But tonight,
don't call it a comeback.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
Andre Ward,
Will T. And Ray.
He wants to be a model.
Ruiz,
too much
Ruiz,
cologne.
Ruiz, 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 Ruiz.
Why are you so hyped though, yeah? Why are you so hyped though?
You don't sound Mexican. You just sound like you're crazy.
All right, right now we have host of the Quarterly Report podcast, Armand Leon. What's going on, Armand?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Yo, everything's good, man. We got a fool over here chanting Ruiz because he's just so infatuated with me right now.
Hey, Armand, you know this fight brought me back to Twitter. This is Ray. It's crazy how it all went down. And I felt like when you tweeted out, Joshua's still gonna win a fight, but man, he's getting beat up. I'm paraphrasing. You that tweet looked nervous to me. Like this dude might lose.
Yeah, I remember. Like, so I don't know how many of you all in listening as well have the zone. I do, and I'm watching the fight.
I watched the fight on DAZN.
Yeah, so the first round, you're like, okay, AJ's in the filling out phase of it. Mm-hmm. Ruiz was the aggressor from the jump. And then it was like, okay, you know, AJ's kind of his evolution as a fighter because he's still young, relatively speaking. A lot of guys don't know. He's not really the most experienced fighter. So I was like, okay, he's just getting the feel for Ruiz's power. And, you know, Ruiz, you look at him and you expect a certain type of fighter, but he is skilled and he has deceptive athleticism between his feet and his hand speed. And then you just keep watching and you're like, okay, AJ, what's happening, bro? You're not throwing the jab like you should. You're not letting your hands go in any type of combinations. And it seemed like Ruiz was bothering AJ from the jump. And then the third... since Ruiz down, and I'm like, okay, you got it now. And then from the moment AJ knocks down Ruiz, the end of the fight, it was literally like watching something, and you know it's happening in real life, but you just don't believe it. I'm watching the fight, and I'm like, yo, this is nuts. I was a kid when Buster Douglas beat Mike Tyson, right? So I can't imagine what that was like in real life. And obviously what happened on Saturday is not the level of surprise and shock that Tyson Douglas was. But I'm sitting there watching. I'm thinking to myself, bro, there's so much money on the line. This is literally the biggest, not your biggest fight, because the Vlad fight was the biggest fight for AJ. But this was the beginning, his first American fight. There was so much hype. Mm-hmm. He had a feature on The Undefeated. He's on billboards in Times Square. He's 20,000 in Madison Square Garden, and you are getting embarrassed by Andy Ruiz. I was just thinking to myself, Joe, this can't. Shout out to Jay-Z, Benny Siegel, Scarface. This can't be life, because that's exactly what I was thinking right now.
Yo, what's funny is, and I tweeted this out, what happened to his jab, Anthony Joshua? What happened to his jab? I mean, it's frustrating. I watched Lennox Lewis years ago beat up David Tua by just jabbing him to death because he was so small. And I'm like, why aren't you going back to kind of the basics?
Yeah, honestly, watching heavyweight fighters now, it's exciting because they're so – we've never before seen this level of – like Max Kellerman often says – we're not in the heavyweight era. We're in the super heavyweight era. Like between Wilder, between Joshua, Fury even as well, and now you got Usyk moving up. You got these super huge athletic men fighting, right? And the while they are exciting, Fury less so than Joshua and Wilder, they aren't necessarily the most skilled in the sweet science, right?
Uh-huh.
We literally have gone through almost two decades of Lennox to Vlad, or both Klitschko's really, mm-hmm. as these big heavyweights who are like cerebral in it when it comes to their jab. Like, I mean, they would terrorize eras, right? I mean, Klitschko had the iron jab. Like, he would knock Bama's out with a jab. It was like the most insane thing to ever witness. And now you have Wilder, who is completely reckless, right? Deontay Wilder should be the best jabber in the sport, specifically because he's got the best punch.
Yeah.
I just feel like if God bless the dead, if Manny was still alive, Manuel Stewart, and if he got his hands on Deontay Wilder, Deontay Wilder would be just so much better of a fighter because he would set you up with his jab. Because we all know he's got Thor's hammer in his gloves. He's got the best punch in the sport, but he doesn't do anything to set it up. He's just more athletic and just stronger than everyone else. But with AJ, especially after the Joseph Parker fight, I was like, okay, he's starting to learn how to box. But you're right, Ray. Man, the first few rounds, he threw a little bit of a jab, and I think he got a little bit too confident once he got the knockdown, and it came back to bite him.
We'll see.
No, my question was around the fight being on DAZN, right? Anthony Joshua making his debut in the U.S., which should be a huge deal considering he has three of the four titles. We're trying to set, you know, they're trying to set the stage for him versus Deontay Wilder. From your perspective, do you think that guys such as I'll exclude Canelo, but guys such as Anthony Joshua and Triple G are hurt by fighting on DAZN and DAZN not having a strategic partnership with any regular broadcast channels to promote the fight?
I think it depends on how you look at it, right? And I talked about this last week on my pod when it came to Netflix, you know what I mean? Like Netflix, I'm of the age where I remember when Netflix first started jumping off, and not like Netflix now where you stream everything, but when you had to set up the queue and then you'd get the DVDs mailed to you and all this other stuff. And, right. You know, at the beginning, and this is like everybody knows this now, but Blockbuster had the opportunity to buy Netflix. And if they did, you know, obviously Blockbuster would still be thriving as opposed to being out of business. And sometimes you got to look for it. Sometimes you got to take a step back before you, you know, sprint forward. I think with AJ and Canelo specifically, I don't know necessarily what Golovkin's stake is, but I'm sure with Canelo and Joshua, they probably have some investments in DAZN in terms of they've got some stock options. And if the company ascends the way many people believe it will, they're going to be paid handsomely at the end, but on the backside. But I do believe that there could be, you know, some diminishing returns waiting out for that big payday. Obviously, a lot of the rumblings are that DAZN is going to get involved with the NFL Sunday Ticket. Mm-hmm. The NFL isn't necessarily happy with DirecTV. If that happens, obviously, that's a game changer. And then this time in 2020, we're going to be looking at DAZN completely different. Mm. And I think if you look at some of the marketplace trends, what the WWE has done with their network, seems like brilliant now, but at the time it looked a bit risky. And, you know, again, the entire media landscape is just changing as we speak. I mean, all of us have podcasts, right?
Mm-hmm.
5 years ago, nobody was talking about a podcast. Everything is changing. Everything is streamed. Everybody wants things when they want it. So I do believe that Anthony Joshua's immediate impact, I'll put it to you like this. Yeah. This is a great question. If Anthony Joshua was not signed to DAZN, he and Wilder would have fought already. I think the biggest hiccup was for that first fight. Would it be a pay-per-view fight? Would it be a DAZN streaming? Or would it be some type of joint project? And the numbers, too many people were involved. Too many hands were in the kitchen. It was too big, too massive of a fight to get that number squared away. So I do think on the front side, there probably is a bit of a diminishing returns for AJ for not being signed with Showtime PBC or Top Rank even. But I do think on the long run, it will be beneficial, maybe not necessarily to his name and his reputation, because we don't know how he's going to bounce back from this fight, but definitely in the bank account.
I think the zone is big globally. And I feel as though they've done a good job with both the Canelo fight and this fight. But we got to go to break. But I want to quickly ask, before we do that, Holly Holm knocked out Ronda Rousey. She never regained that mystique she had, that fear she put in people, never came back. I don't know if it was Antonio Tarver or Glenn Kauf Johnson, but one of them, they knocked Roy out of the game when Roy was, he was that dude.
Yeah.
Is this Anthony Joshua's moment where he's lost that mystique, man?
Bro, it's an interesting question. I mean, remember Paul Williams looked like he was going to beat everybody. I mean, Paul Williams looked like he was Floyd did not want to. So this is the thing. People don't remember. Floyd did not want to smoke with Paul. Mm-mm. And I don't blame him. Paul was there was no one the size, the skill, the length as Paul. And then Sergio came, Paul was never the same or never the same.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes, There's so much layers to it, right? Mm-hmm. If you and some dude on the corner, right? Somebody just around the way, you and some dude got in a fight, mm-hmm. right? And let's say you lost. Number one, your pride is gonna be hurt, right?
Yeah.
You gonna be looking like, damn, and everybody sees it, right? You like, bro, you know, you can't talk to nobody. Everybody, even your homeboys, they gonna be kind of looking at you a little bit funny. You know what I'm saying? And it's gonna stick with you mentally, right? Emotionally. But then you then add on to the physical pain, right? No matter what you think about what happened on Saturday, and a lot of AJ fans have been coming up with rumors and all this other stuff. Bottom line, Andy Ruiz knocked AJ down 4 times. That's not a fluke. You got dropped 4 times by the seventh round.
Yeah.
That's not a fluke, right?
Yeah, it's not a fluke.
This is the whole, and this is why I love boxing. You don't know how anyone. It's funny in the hot takery of today's society, everybody always wants to get takes, but we don't ever want to look at things from a rational, intelligent standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
He got beat up. Like, he didn't just lose. He got beat up. And he got beat up in a new environment with everything on the line. Like, it cannot be overstated how much money he lost on Saturday. Yeah, exactly. So not only do you get beat up, not only are you in – like a big fight at Madison Square Garden with 20,000 people in the stadium to watch you. Not only are you using this moment as your introduction to the American public, but you got beat up in front of the whole world. I don't know. Like, it takes a certain special type of person to come back from that. I don't know Anthony Joshua well enough to know if he has that kind of gumption to be like, you know what? I've been this close from the mountaintop, and then I fell all the way down. It takes a special type of person to dust themselves off and go right back to going, climbing that mountain, despite the fact that they just fell down in front of the entire world. Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting to see what AJ does with it, but I don't know. I honestly cannot tell you how it goes.
Hey, Amon, you can stay with us. You can stay on, right?
Oh, for sure.
All right, we're going to continue this discussion after break. So with Anthony Joshua losing, who's the best heavyweight in the game, Wilder, Fury, or even Ortiz? We'll discuss that after break. Listen to Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
All right.
I done did a lot of things in my day. I admit it, I don't take back what I say. If I said it, then I meant it. All my life I won a Grammy, but I probably never get it. I ain't never had no trophy or no motherfucking ribbon. Fuck the system, I'm that bend the law, cut the rules. I'm about to risk it all. I ain't got too much to lose. Y'all been eating long enough. It's my turn to cut the food. Pass the plate with my drink. This my day. Lucky you, hope you do. Woo! Y'all gotta move. Y'all gotta move. Move. Give me some room, give me some room, give me the juice. How about the coupe? How about the coupe? How about a shoot? Y'all gotta move, y'all gotta move. Give me the juice. Back on my bullets, my back to the wall, turn my back on you all and you finish. Back to these bullets, it's back to the job, put my map out and all of you running. Back on my hood, it's just back to the pushing, he taxing, I'm actually pumping. Can't fuck with you rappers, you practically sucking. You might have went platinum, but that don't mean nothing. I'm actually buzzing, it's time. Straight out the kitchen, I told him the oven is mine. I do not fuck with you guys. If I don't kill you, just put you on top.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, Ray Jeezy.
The bold Will Teasy.
And by myself,
Wilder. Fight Donnell Dawkins about 8 years ago.
That was me. Go ahead. Check out the Football Garbage Time podcast at www.footballgarbagetime.com. It's a great show. Make sure you check it out. I can't believe you mentioned Darnell Dockett.
I'll be Craig. I'll fight you.
when the Urban Sports team was trying to make a name for themselves. iTunes Top 100. What was it?
iTunes,
nice, nice way to change the subject.
I know, right? You see what I did? Yeah,
it's all good.
I tried, man. We have host of the Quarterly Report, Armand Lee, on the line.
Blogs every day.
Hey, so Deontay Wilder will take on Luis Ortiz in September. Deontay Wilder knocked out Ortiz in a very competitive fight. Is this a smart fight for Wilder?
I mean, I think I was curious as to why. It didn't seem like there was a much of a call for this fight. It didn't seem like people were asking for a rematch. It was a competitive fight. It was, at that time, Wilder's biggest and best competition. And he answered the bell. Unlike AJ, Wilder showed that he does have a chin, right? Because Ortiz tagged him a few times.
Yeah, he did. That's true.
Yeah, Wilder stood up and stood strong and then ended the fight as a champion. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I don't feel like there's a demand for this fight, especially considering how the announcement was made on Friday that Wilder's going to fight Fury in 2020. I don't know. I mean, Ortiz is a skilled and a strong enough fighter that I wouldn't risk it, but, I mean, given off what happened Saturday. But, I mean, there's just not that many options for Deontay Wilder to make a compelling fight. He doesn't want to fight Dillon White, obviously. And, you know, Anthony Joshua is kind of out of there now. So he really only has Fury and Ortiz to really go with. Because I know before the break you asked me who's going to be the best fighter in the heavyweight division. Obviously, everybody talks about Wilder or Fury. Now you got to add Ruiz. But I still think, and I thought this before AJ lost, I thought if Oleksandr Usyk fought AJ, Usyk would win. And I think Usyk would beat any of the guys at the heavyweight division. He obviously has to get. He has to show what he can do at heavyweight as opposed to cruiserweight. But in terms of skill, I think he's the best one.
Well, let me ask you this, Armand. Some would say that the rationale behind him fighting Ortiz and then Fury would be because those are two of the top level fighters in the heavyweight division, and they also have the size stature of AJ. Now we know that AJ. Went down on Saturday, but we also know that history is littered, particularly during the era of Ali, Frazier, Foreman, guys like that, where the top heavyweights have lost but still have come back and redeemed themselves and built even greater anticipation for that heavyweight showdown between. And I think we have that case now between AJ and Deontay Wilder. What do you think? Anthony Joshua has to do to rebound and reclaim that stake and regain that aura of being the top fighter in the heavyweight division.
I mean, it's tough, you know, because, you know, you're right. Back in the 70s, we had, you know, even before the 70s with Joe Louis. Joe Louis, a lot of people forget that he lost to Shep Smalling first and then he came back to win, right? Mm-hmm. So, you're right. The history of the sport is littered with heavyweights, of all weight classes, but heavyweights specifically, with guys who have lost and then came back. Unfortunately, is as time has come on, just we as a society, we're nuts, right? You know, like when Ali lost, he didn't have to worry about me. You know what I'm saying? He didn't have to worry about everybody trying to
worry about
every TV show. Yeah, like the level of embarrassment is significantly higher. I mean, and think of it. It's not just AJ, right? When Tyson lost the first fight, it took a lot out of him. He just was never the same. Mm-hmm. You should go down the line. Guys lose their first fight because so much is made about your win-loss record. It takes the win out of your sails a bit. I think AJ, I think from a fighting perspective, he could bounce back, right? It really just depends on what happens in the rematch and moving forward. But I don't know if he could ever truly regain the aura that he had before Saturday, only because It's a cliche we hear over and over again, but you only get one chance to make a first impression. And Anthony Joshua's lasting first impression will always be, in America, him getting beat up. Like, he got beat up for 6 rounds. And, you know, and then basically quit in the 7th. You know what I mean? Like, he was upset initially that the ref stopped the fight, but the ref was like, yo, why are you, come on. Like, why you got your arms on the ropes in the corner? Like, come on, you want to fight, don't you? That, those are images that I think the American casual boxing fan will never allow him to live down. Mm. And I don't think, I mean, yeah, a Wilder Joshua fight probably does happen in the future, but it will never be what it could have been before Saturday.
Well, I'll say this. I think we've seen examples of, I think it's a little bit different. Anthony Joshua actually quit, right? but we've seen examples of guys who've lost, right, but then have come back in the next fight in a rematch and have won in devastating fashion. Particularly one guy who comes now, it's a totally different situation. No, totally different situation. Roy Jones Jr. when he lost to Montel Griffin, right?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Go ahead.
No, what? Roy came back and in the first round knocked out Montel Griffin, and then that mystique of him being the baddest man on the planet came back, even though it was a bad loss. You know, Roy Jones was robbed of his victory. If this fight takes place, let's say, in the UK at Wembley Stadium, him versus Ruiz, and he comes back, and Anthony Joshua comes back, and he gets a knockout, do you think that still bring? Do you still think that knocks some of the stink off of his image?
Not really, because here's the thing. If Anthony Joshua fights Andy Ruiz in the UK, if you are a boxing fan, you'll be like, okay, that was a good fight for AJ. He needed that. But the people who watched or who followed on the timeline or who are getting the jokes off now, they're not going to be watching Anthony Joshua in the UK fight Andy Ruiz, right? There was such a big display about AJ's first fight stateside. There was such a big production. He's at Madison Square Garden. And, yeah, Wembley Stadium is Wembley Stadium. But a lot of the people who casually know Anthony Joshua, they didn't watch the Conor McGregor fight. They didn't watch Joseph Park. They didn't watch Povetkin. They didn't see Vladimir Klitschko. They didn't see all of the fights that led us to believe that, yo, AJ could be the real deal. They didn't see any of them. They saw this one was fake time, and that it was 9 o'clock, and it was comfortable, and they understood it, man. And there was a big push to make people aware that, yo, this is real, right? Again, you got one shot. With Roy, remember, Roy's first loss, he got DQ'd. So people didn't look at Roy crazy. But then when Roy got knocked down that first time, after what was it, Tarver? Then it was like, okay, hold on. Roy is, this ain't the same Roy no more. You know what I'm saying? Roy was rapping. He was going to win his brothers. Boom, boom, boom. Remember, Lennox was looked upon way different before he lost Rock, right?
Yeah.
Losing a controversial fight is one thing, right? Golovkin lost his fight against Canelo, even though I think most of us feel that he didn't lose that first one.
I thought he lost.
Losing in a decision is one thing. But when you get beat up and you hit the deck, it's a completely, like, all bets are off. Even if AJ beats Andy Ruiz in the UK, I think he's, for so many American boxing fans or casual American boxing fans, the image of him winning, the image of him getting beat up that badly will always live in their head.
And you know what's sad? And I'm going to go on a tangent. And forgive me for my tangent. I'm telling y'all ahead of time. You talk about the casual American boxing fan. What the casual American boxing fan emphasized or focused on mostly was, he lost to a fat dude, man. The fat dude from Toy Story knocked him out. This dude, did he eat what he wants and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, man, we on this anti-bullying tip. You go after the LGBTQ community, the African-American community. People talk. You make racist remarks, insulting remarks. But they done piled on this man because of his weight, even though he has a skilled as a boxer. And that's what people can't let go of. And I'm like, man, even – you know, some of these guys on the bigger networks, I ain't saying nobody's name right now. It's just so unfortunate that to me, that diminished a little bit of what Andy Ruiz was able to accomplish because, you know, he wasn't in the best shape. Even Will said he was going to Royal Farms afterwards to celebrate because now you can be overweight and knock people out, man. It's crazy.
It wasn't even so much of a tangent that I went on. It was more of me being disrespectful. It was more of like, look, anything is possible.
You were like, that's we dirty. Can change. You were like, we could change the Urban Sports Scene logo to this fat dude.
Teddy Atlas said what? He said this dude has set boxing back 20 years because
physical fitness.
He said that?
Yeah. Back 100 years.
100 years. I said 20, 100. My bad. That's crazy.
What you think about that, Armand?
I mean, you guys make a point. And I forget who it was. It was like, yo, we've become more conscious about being what we say and being derogatory towards all these different groups. But if you want to say something about a fat man, that's one spot. Like, you can't say nothing about fat women. A fat man, let them jokes off.
True.
Andy Ruiz will beat everybody who's training these jokes up. Like, if you wanted to scrap, he will abuse you something serious. But for whatever reason, everybody was getting the jokes up. But you know what it was? It wasn't just that Andy Ruiz is fat, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's that Anthony Joshua came in the ring looking like an Adonis, right? He got muscle on top of muscle. He looking like a defensive end, yeah? It's like to see him get beat up that way, you just instinctively, even the biggest boxing fan, we all know, like, the best boxers don't carry that much muscle. Like, they just don't. But even just for, like, a big-time boxing fan, when you sit and watch what was happening, you just like, your mind is like, dog, this doesn't make sense. There's no reason. Wow. This dude.
Dang,
and then on top of Anthony, he was gassed. He was tired in the third round.
Armand, you're not helping me, man. You're not helping me right now. That's crazy. Royal Farms Arena. Will T is going to be fighting there.
Absolutely.
He's going to be his new sponsor. That's crazy.
Oh, man.
We done lost a lot of time. I mean, obviously, we wanted to talk about one-time Thurman, right?
Yeah, we're going
to
do that. We can do that next week.
You know, retiring Manny, which doesn't matter at this point. We just want to see Manny finally retire and
Keith Thurman fight
Errol Spence.
I like Manny.
That's what we all want to see.
I want to see Manny fight Errol. That's, to be honest.
No, come on, man.
No, no, you don't.
I do.
No, you don't.
Come on.
No, you don't.
Y'all know I really don't.
I actually think Manny gives Keith Thurman problems.
No, they beat Keith Thurman.
He ain't beating Keith Thurman.
I think he is. Manny can beat Keith Thurman.
He could beat Keith Thurman.
He might be able to, but he's not going to
beat whatever. Him. He could beat Keith Thurman. Thurman ain't that dude.
Armada said several shows ago, Manny Pacquiao is fighting for money because he's lost a lot.
But hey, Armand, you don't think Manny can beat Thurman? Like, we're talking about Thurman.
It's tough to say, man, because the last time I saw Keith was looking real suspect. Now, I'll shoot him some bail because it was his first fight off of a long layoff. So, yeah, there was going to be natural ring rust. But Manny, man, even though Manny has lost power, he's still fast as all hell, man. And I don't know.
I mean, think
about it. In all the big fights that Keith has fought, right, whether Rashawn, Danny, all of them, they have been very, very close. And you could argue.
True.
That Sean beat Keith. And someone also could argue that Danny beat Keith.
Yeah, someone argued that Danny beat Keith. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not saying that I don't think Manny Pacquiao will beat Keith Thurman.
He beat Keith.
I also don't know what type of – I don't know what Keith – I'm so disappointed in him. We probably don't have time. I'm so mad at him for some of the stuff that he thought. He's scared of Bud too.
He's scared of Bud too.
That's a problem. I mean, nobody can fight Bud.
You know what I'm saying? Like Manny, I still think it's hilarious. I tweeted this out the other day. When Earl beat Mikey and they rolled Manny's ass in the ring afterwards, and Manny was like, nah, boy, I don't want to fight him. He ain't paid me. And he was around like, why y'all got me in front of this dude right here? Errol was like, oh, this easy money right here. Manny didn't want no parts of it. Man, he ran straight to Keith Thurman.
I'm just telling you, Thurman, Manny can beat Thurman. I know that. Now, Earl's a whole different beat, but Manny can beat Thurman.
I don't think anybody at 147 is going to be Earl. No. Even Bud. I don't think anybody's beating Earl.
Thank you. We all agree on that.
So, hey, Armand, before I let you go, let our listeners know about the podcast, man.
Yeah, man. Every Tuesday. We moved from Thursday, so now every single Tuesday, man, hit me up. Quarterly report on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, wherever you listen to podcasts, man. We have a great time. Talk about sports, boxing, basketball, music, entertainment, everything in between, man. Check me out. The Quarterly Report. That you can follow me on Twitter at The Quarterly Show. That's Q-U-A-R-G-E-R-L-E-E. And again, every Tuesday, The Quarterly Report podcast drops a new episode, man.
Hey, Armand, and you know we appreciate you being on the show. And also, actually, make sure folks know about your Twitter account, not just Quarterly, but your regular Twitter account.
Yeah, man. So you can follow me, my personal account, Armand, A-R-M-O-N, underscore Lee, L-E-E, and the show's Twitter account, again, Quarterly Report, or The Quarterly Show, excuse me. So Quarterly Show on Twitter, or Armand, underscore Lee.
All right, Armand, thanks for being on, man. We're going to talk more when the fight gets closer in July, when Pacquiao, Thurman, about that week, we're going to talk about even more.
Yes, sir, man. You know, I already know I'm here for it.
All right. Thanks, Armand.
Thank you, Armand.
Yes, sir.
All right, that's my man Armand Lee, again, host of the Quarterly Report podcast. So make sure you subscribe to it on iTunes, Google Play, all that good stuff that podcasts are being shown. So, again, thank you all for listening.
Played, shown.
All right, thank you, Will T. Played. No problem. Thank you, sir. This dude here. Thank you for correcting me, though. I appreciate that for real. All right, anyway, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Hey, Megan, lead us out, big homie.